The Golden Lion for Best Film goes to The Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro.
I'm 52. I weigh 300 pounds. And I've done 10 movies. And there is a moment in every narrator's life, storyteller, that no matter what age you are, you risk it all and go and do something different than what you do. As a Mexican, I want to say this is a first for a Mexican storyteller, so I want to dedicate and give the prize to every young Mexican filmmaker or Latin American filmmaker that is dreaming to do something in the fantastic genre as a fairy tale, as a parable, and is faced with a lot of people saying it can be done. It can.
The winner of this year's Golden Lion at the 74th Venice International Film Festival, Guillermo del Toro. We'll look at his sensational film and some of the other winners from this year's event today on The Cinema Show. Also ahead,
we had also jurors from Argentina, from Belgium, from France, and so it was properly international, and there was a real sense of a sort of group of people from around the world, travelling around the world through the movies.
Jury members Mark Cousins and David Stratton will let us in on what it's like to take a seat at the decision table of the world's oldest film festival. And
my sister's psychic.
I've seen her. She wants you to know that she's happy.
We'll set sail through the menacing canals of Venice in the classic thriller from 1973, Don't Look Now. That's all to come on The Cinema Show on Monocle 24.
If you remain pure and stay with your faith in whatever you have faith in my case is monsters, eventually things go right, because what I love about this prize, and by the way, I'm going to call him Sergio Leone. Sergio and I are very thankful because this award comes from the hands of a generous and beautiful jury, for not for something that is alien to what I believe in. And I believe in life, I believe in love, and I believe in cinema. And I leave this stage full of life, full of love, and full of cinema. Thank you.
An emotional Guillermo del Toro delivering a wonderful acceptance speech as he took away the Golden Lion at this year's Venice International Film Festival. Hello from the great city of Venice, and welcome to this special edition of The Cinema Show, wrapping up this year's 74th edition of the world's oldest film festival. I'm Ben Rylan. Now, it's not uncommon for a festival to please its dedicated followers by handing awards to rather obscure titles, the kind that might otherwise pass by mainstream audiences with little more than a passing, puzzled glance. But with his winning film, Mexican filmmaker Guillermo del Toro has done something quite different. The Shape of Water is a lush, sweeping romance between a small, mute woman, played by Sally Hawkins, and a strange, fish-like creature locked away in a laboratory.
She deaf?
Mute, sir. She can hear you.
You clean that lab, you get out.
This may very well be the most sensitive asset ever to be housed in this facility.
You may think that thing looks human. Stands on two legs, right? But we're created in the Lord's image. You don't think that's what the Lord looks like, do you?
This creature is intelligent, capable of language, of understanding emotions.
Of course, Del Toro is certainly not the first filmmaker to see a love story lying at the heart of a classic monster movie. Ever since the sad and lonely monster escaped from the grip of Dr. Frankenstein way back in 1931, many have mined classic lore for tales that blur the lines of horror and sentimentality. Interestingly, Del Toro himself was actually slated as the director of a remake of Universal's classic Frankenstein, a project which has so far failed to materialize, but in his winning film, he's undoubtedly crafted something even better. The responsibility of awarding the winner, of course, fell to the jury, which was this year led by Annette Bening, and one of the people taking a seat on that jury was the legendary Australian critic David Stratton. Hello, is that David?
Hi, Ben. How are you?
Going well, thank you. David, tell me, how does one come to be a member of a jury at an event as prestigious as the Venice Film Festival?
You're invited. I've been a member of several international juries in the past, including Berlin and Carlo Vivari and Venice before. I was on the jury in Venice in 1994 when David Lynch was the president of the jury. So I've been on a few juries. You get invited by the director of the festival, in this case, Alberto Barbera, who's the director of the Venice Film Festival, as you know. And he actually approached me during Cannes this year and asked me if I would be willing to come on the jury again. I actually pointed out to him that I had been on before because sometimes they don't like to have jurors on twice, but that didn't seem to bother him. And he sort of indicated that because he'd already, I think, was planning to have or had already invited, I'm not sure which, four actresses on the jury, I think he wanted to sort of balance with someone with a critical background.
David, I've been watching you on Australian television for almost as long as I've been alive, and usually you're telling us all about the films you've seen with only your former co-star Margaret Pomeranz to disagree with you. What's it like to be seated at a table with so many others, many of whom you probably don't really know very well, and of course you're there to discuss at length your personal feelings about the film?
It's really, I suppose, like sitting around a table with friends. It's true, I'd actually met Edgar Wright before, but I can't say I knew him very well, and I'd also met Ildikó Enyedi before, but again, I can't say I knew her very well. The rest I hadn't met. There are nine of us on the jury, so you basically sit around after seeing the film, not immediately afterwards. That's really at the discretion of the president of the jury, which in this case was Annette Bening, who was an excellent president, I must say. Much better president than David Lynch, I have to say. Annette decided that it would be good to have a discussion every other day or every couple of days, something like that. And we just sit around and she would control the discussion to the extent that she would let everybody have their say. We'd go around in a circle to say what we thought about the films. Everybody had their say, uninterrupted. And then after a sort of a general go around, we'd have a general sort of discussion. So we talked about each film very thoroughly.
So, David, how does it feel for you as a longtime film critic to play a role in a festival like Venice?
Oh, look, it's very enjoyable for me. I mean, it's another level, I suppose. I would have gone to Venice anyway this year to see it just as a reviewer. But to be asked to be on the jury, it's obviously a big responsibility. And everybody on the jury, their ideas and opinions are very carefully listened to and absorbed by the others. So, you know, it's possible to change minds, or at least you learn from the other jury members. I've been on juries, in fact, I've presided, I've been president of Tipreski juries, which is the International Film Critics juries. I've done that in Cannes and Venice more than once. And there you've got all critics. This time was the most enjoyable and it was fun.
David Stratton, always a pleasure speaking with you.
Okay, all the best then.
In his second win here at Venice, Israeli filmmaker Samuel Mouse took the Silver Lion Grand Jury Prize for Foxtrot, the tragic tale of a father whose actions unintentionally result in the death of his son, who's also a soldier.
Mr. Alberto Barbera, Mr. Paolo Barretta, Miss Annette Bening, dear jury and dear audience, Thank you for a wonderful moment that will remain forever in my heart. I would like to dedicate this award to Mr. Katriel Shchori, head of the Israel Film Fund, who stand like this lion and protect the freedom of speech and expression and the purity of art.
The film wasn't without its detractors, though. Israel's culture minister expressed fury over what she saw as an attack on the Israeli army's reputation, though the minister wasn't actually here in Venice and hasn't seen the film. The award for Best Screenplay went to one of the most talked-about films of the festival, the oddly named Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. The film stars Frances McDormand struggling after the death of her daughter who, after months of inaction from the police, transforms a few billboards into her very own political weapon.
So Mildred Hayes, why did you put up these billboards?
My daughter Angela was murdered 7 months ago. It seems to me the police department is too busy torturing black folks to solve actual crime.
The hell is this?
Dixon, I'm in the middle of my goddamn Easter dinner. Sorry, kids.
I know, Chief, but I think we got kind of a problem. Sunshine
beating on a good time. I'd do anything to catch your daughter's killer.
I don't think those billboards is very fair.
The time it took you to get out here whining like a bitch, Willoughby. Some other poor girl's probably out there being butchered right now.
The script was written by British playwright Martin McDonagh, and the film has emerged as one of the best-reviewed titles of the festival. Predictions are that this will be the first in a long line of awards to come.
I've been with the actors all week with Francis and Sam and Woody, and we've had a beautiful time. We've had a lot of beautiful pasta, and we've had loads and loads of beautiful Negronis. But this is the most beautiful part, so thank you very much.
Now, despite the seemingly endless debate over whether virtual reality is really cinema, Venice seems to have at least tried to put a cork in that wine by awarding the category its first ever prize with a jury chaired by American director John Landis.
The Best VR Story Award goes to Bloodless by Gina Kim.
What really fascinated me about this incredible new medium was that it really allows the viewers to experience the pain of others, which the flat cinema, the 2D cinema, can also do, but in a very different way. And I do believe that virtual reality has an incredible potential to the story of the victims and the repressed in a very different manner than the old cinema did and does.
But the winner of not only the award for Best Actress, but also Best Acceptance Speech this year was the superb Charlotte Rampling for Hannah.
I don't know what it's like until you actually experience this. You know, so you actually experience, for me, getting this prize in Italy, Italy of all countries, because Italy is my source absolutely of inspiration. I came here when I was 22 and made my first film with Gianfranco Mingozzi. And then from then I went on to film with Luchino Visconti and Lilia Cavani and Adriano Celentano and Gianni Amelio and Giuseppe Patroni Griffi. These are my masters, all of them. This country has, if I'm here tonight and receiving this prize that this wonderful jury has actually offered to me, it's because of Italy. It really is. And I'm now getting this prize because I've worked with Andrea Pallaloro, who made the film Hannah that I'm getting this prize for, who is the young generation. I'm now the older generation, and I'm now working with the younger generation in Italy. So my life is connected to Italy. Thank you so much. Thank you, Festival. Thank you, Andrea Sukovic, for producing this wonderful film. And thank you so much for letting me be here.
In a moment, we'll find out what it's like to actually be a part of one of the juries here in Venice when we talk to Mark Cousins from the Horizons section. But first, a look at what else is happening in the movie presses this week. Columbia has selected the debut film from Ivan D. Gaona as its contender for the next Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. Guilty Men had its world premiere in Venice, and it tells the story of a rural town leader who slips further and further into a tense standoff with a right-wing paramilitary group. Colombia's closest brush with an Oscar came last year with the sublime Embrace of the Serpent, after it picked up awards at both Sundance and Cannes. And as we heard on last week's show when we spoke to the man in charge of the Venice Film Festival, Alberto Barbera, that other big event is now in full swing over in Canada. The Toronto Film Festival is about halfway through its run, but as Variety reports, not an awful lot has happened as yet. Without any big sales or clear festival favourites, those in attendance will no doubt be hoping for a late surprise. In one of the more notable events, Christopher Nolan made an appearance at a special screening of his latest film, Dunkirk, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of IMAX, though it was largely seen as an attempt to remind Academy voters of his big war epic as the awards season drifts ever closer. This is The Cinema Show. Stay tuned. The Horizons section here in Venice aims to shine a focus on first-time filmmakers, but what does it actually mean to be a part of the jury? Charged with the responsibility of watching hours of films and assessing each one. Mark Cousins is a noted expert on cinema, perhaps best known for his epic 15-hour documentary on the entire history of the craft. He was a member of the Horizons jury here in Venice this year, and here he explains how it all works.
Venice, a masterpiece among cities, rises like a vision from the foam of the sea. Princely palaces of purest marble range in majestic order along glittering lagoons that resound with the music of plashing wavelets, rhythmic oars, and the songs of the gondoliers.
At the Venice Film Festival, the Horizons section is the section that tries to look to the future of cinema and to the non-centre of cinema. So it tends not to be about the big American films, for example. It tends to be films from the Middle East or Africa, etc. And it's really trying to push the boundaries, hence the word horizon. The chairman of the jury was Gianni Amelio, the famous Italian filmmaker. Also, to my delight, on the jury was one of my heroes, the great Iranian director Rakhshan Beniatamad, who I've wanted to meet for years. She's been making the kind of social and humanist cinema that has really fueled Iranian cinema for a long time. But we had also jurors from Argentina, from Belgium, from France, and so it was properly international, and there was a real sense of a sort of group of people from around the world, travelling around the world through the movies. We were filmmakers, we are curators, writers, etc. on our jury. What we would do after each film, we would have 40 minutes or so between the films, and people would either sit in small groups or often together and share first impressions. Those 40 minutes, 1 hour of discussions are really important. It's important that you don't have anyone bossy or over-talkative. You don't want a rent-a-gob. There needs to be loads of space for people to just coax out their first impressions. You know, you've just seen the film, it's quite raw, you're seeing some very unusual films. It has to be quite a gentle conversation where people are not afraid to express their half-thought-out thoughts. I completely agree in that at film festivals, often a group think forms quite quickly. I see it often in Cannes, the critics gathering, and within about 10 minutes, a kind of consensus has emerged, and that's slightly dangerous. So some of the most difficult films that we saw in the Orizzonte, the Horizons jury, were ones which sent us scattering in a way. We saw a particularly troubling but rather brilliant film called Oniba about a cannibal, a documentary about a guy who killed and ate a colleague in the 1980s. And as soon as I came out of that, I was out of that cinema like a bullet out of a gun. I couldn't speak to anybody. I was so disturbed, and I felt it had dug into my subconscious in a way, and into that kind of place where the monsters are in your mind. And so I disappeared. It's strange when you've seen a really bad film on the contrary, you can't wait to get to your fellow jurors and really express how much you hated it. And we saw, I think, 4 films that we all really hated. And it was so much fun and so bonding to talk about how terrible they were.
I'm sorry about the interview, Nico.
Don't call me Nico. Call me by my real name, Krista.
My life started after the experience with the Velvet Underground. I started making my own music.
It was Jim Morrison's idea. He asked me to write down my dreams.
We gave the best film to a film called Nico, a biopic of Nico. Going in, I thought, well, you know, I don't like biopics. They're often lines like, oh, here comes David Bowie. Hi, David, sort of thing. You know, they're often clunky. But in this film, which was directed by an Italian, shot in Britain and Prague, set in 1 year in Nico's life in 1988, there was a brilliant central performance by a Danish actress. We were all moved and we were all in tears about it. It was shot 4:3. What excited me for me stylistically about the film was that it looked as if it was made in 1988 and had been, as it were, unearthed from an archive of some sort. So it was a great human story, but also was aesthetically really interesting. So that's the one that we gave the top prize to, and the one that I think everyone really liked. I think the most exciting film that I saw at the Venice Film Festival was in the virtual reality section, not in the Orizzonte section. It was 55 minutes long, and people say that VR films should be 5 or 8 or 10 minutes long. It was directed by the great Taiwanese master filmmaker Simon Liang, and it's just set in a house, and it's a guy who's sick and his mother who's making him rice. It sounds very boring, but there's a ghostly female figure in the house, and because it was VR and you're surrounded by it and set in a jungle, probably in Taiwan, at one point I saw mosquitoes in the film and I thought, oh no, I haven't put my mosquito cream on. And then I realized I'm not there. I'm sitting in a nice VR suite. And it really struck me that I was seeing the future of cinema in that very one film. Even from the earliest days in cinema, filmmakers realized that it was an illusionistic art. Cinema tries to make us feel as if we are there. I think this film made me feel I was there in a more profound way than I've ever felt in a cinema before.
Mark Cousins guiding us through his experience as a member of the Horizons jury at this year's Venice International Film Festival. The winning film, Nico 1988, is also set to play at Denmark's upcoming CPH Pix Festival. Still to come, it's impossible to wander the lanes and canals of Venice without being reminded of a certain Daphne du Maurier story. We'll explain soon. This is The Cinema Show in Venice. Stay tuned. MUBI continues the festival flavour wherever you happen to be in the world with an absolutely sensational variety of international titles this week. Now, we recently heard from Oliver Lachey here on The Cinema Show following the release of his visual spectacle, Mimosas. MUBI is giving his debut a revival with 2010's You Are All Captains, captured in sumptuous 16mm black and white film. There's also the perhaps unexpected collaboration between Gia Coppola, granddaughter of Francis, and James Franco, with her adaptation of his collection of short stories titled Palo Alto. And from director Neil Jordan, 1999's epic romantic drama The End of the Affair, starring Ralph Fiennes and Julianne Moore. Sample a month of movies for free by heading to mubi.com/monocle. That's MUBI/monocle. Finally, today, we couldn't leave Venice without paying tribute to a film that's undoubtedly on the mind of any viewer who happens to pass through here. Daphne du Maurier is perhaps best known as the writer of some of Alfred Hitchcock's most loved films, such as Rebecca in 1940 and The Birds in 1963. In 1971, she published a collection of short stories called Not After Midnight, which was later republished in the US under its better-known title Don't Look Now. The classic film adaptation in 1973 stars Julie Christie and Donald Sutherland, with Venice cast as the backdrop not for its typical beauty, but for its labyrinthine menace.
Now listen to me.
I've listened to you. You were the one who said let the children play where they want to. You let it go near that pond. I want to say a prayer. Maybe I should start taking my pills again.
On the desk right there.
Thank you.
From its early scenes, the main protagonist of Don't Look Now is a man of fact-based conviction. John Baxter is busy working away with his family in the quaint British countryside on a grey, drizzly day. His daughter, dressed fitfully in a red raincoat, plays outside near the garden pond. Then, as if by pure intuition, something alerts John to trouble outside. His quick glance out the window is soon followed by howls of grief. Sometime later, we're transported to Venice, where the grey, drizzly weather seems to have followed John Baxter and his wife, Laura. The vast beauty of the city offers the devastated couple something to focus upon, and while John busies himself with a restoration project at a church, Laura happens upon a pair of unusual women who claim to be psychics.
You're sad.
My sister's psychic.
I've seen her. She wants you to know that she's happy.
Christina's dead, Laura.
He has the gift.
There are visual cues littered throughout this film that hint at what might be transpiring beneath the rippling surface. Some elements of the plot appear to have taken place slightly out of time, while the city seems to be caught in an endless weather loop of grey, late autumn, windy afternoons. The sensible, straight-faced John Baxter is quick to point out that, despite the heavy grief weighing down upon him, he doesn't believe in psychic visions or supernatural tales. And yet it's he who is transfixed by repeated sightings of a small child in a red raincoat. And it's he who attracts the unwanted attention of a local police inspector investigating a series of mysterious deaths. Nearly 45 years after its release, director Nicholas Roeg's strange and chilly thriller still resonates as a wonderfully effective film. There are perhaps very few comparable titles that make such clever use of physicality as a plot device. Revelations of red signalling dread, shots of beautiful old churches that quickly spin with a close-up of a menacing gargoyle. Many have been taken by the great beauty of the city of Venice, but no one quite as literally as poor John Baxter. And after viewing Don't Look Now, it's unlikely that you'll ever travel these canals on a windy autumn day with quite the same ease. Well, that's all for this week's show. Next week, it's our animation special featuring the Academy Award-winning director of the Studio Ghibli film, The Red Turtle.
In England, you get the grey days. People say, oh, it's not a very nice day today. On the contrary, the grey days are exquisite. They're so subtle. They have their own ambience and different grey values are exquisite.
That's Michael Dudok-DeWitt, director of the truly sensational film, The Red Turtle, coming up next week. Today's show was edited by Christy Evans and researched by Yolene Goffin. I'm Ben Ryland. Thank you for listening.